Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us today on Gold Radio Cafe. It's Friday, January 4th, 2013, and welcome to the Gold and Silver Financial Review. My name is Bosco Kacharovich, and this program is brought to you by Central Metals, your gold and silver bullion dealer. Our website is centralmetalscorp.com, and our phone number is 800-649-6722. We will be accepting email questions during the program at mail@centralmetalscorp.com. That's mail@centralmetalscorp.com. And we can also take live questions if you wanted to call 714-364-4707. That's for live questions at 714-364-4707. I'm just going to start off with some quotes on the market here. Gold is going up and down quite a bit today because of the job numbers. Right now we're at 1644.30 for gold, and silver is 29.73. I did some calculations, and I'm going to post some results in just a minute. But right now, we'd like to go out west and welcome back our professor, Mr. Jeff Dunphy. Welcome back to the program.
Hello, Bosco. It's lovely to be back. Glad to say that I've recovered. It was a bit of a challenging month of December. Flat on my back with double pneumonia. It wasn't fun.
Well, it is the season for that kind of thing, but we're glad to have you back. I've had quite a few listeners, inquire, looking forward to your return and so on. So what I'm going to start off, Jeff, with, just because this is our first program of the year, look back at 2012. I just did some calculations this morning. Gold, roughly, this, people might have different numbers, but based on the charts that I was looking at, we have gold, another plus year for gold. It's up 6.9% for 2012. Silver is up 9.3%. The S&P is up roughly 14%. The Dow is up roughly 8% for the year. The U.S. dollar is down 0.4% for the year. Oil is down 8.5% for the year. And one of the indicators that for the gold miners, the HUI, which is the unhedged miners index, is down 16.5% for 2012. So, I mean, based on that indicator, anyone who thinks that gold is in a bubble, I think they're sadly mistaken. If gold was in a bubble, I think the HUI index would be hitting all-time highs. So, and we have now, it's 12 years in a row that gold has shown a positive return on the market. And, I think right now, based on this correction, it's a pretty good buying opportunity. I don't know where the markets are going to go in the short term, but it is down quite a bit. And, it seems like same thing they did last year. Near the end of the year, they knocked the gold and silver down quite a bit. And on this program, I said to all our listeners, too, it was a good buying opportunity. And then over the next few months, we saw gold rally. So I think the same thing is going to happen again this year, based on what's happening around the world. So, Jeff, what did you want to look back on in 2012, some key points or topics that we could start the show off with today?
Okay. So, Bosco, if I might, I'm going to circumnavigate the globe. We're going to chat about the global economy. We're going to do an overview of the global economy. And then I'm going to bring it right back into what you've just left, and that is the topic of gold, where it is, what it's done, and how we see things moving forward. Okay, so let us, I mean, one of the big splashes of the media of this year has been the U.S. election. And, I mean, one of the paraphrases that one of the financial reporters in Canada has coined is, the more things change, the more they stay the same. And we saw, Bosco, this year that the U.S. election was the spending of $6 billion, and they took the keys out of Barack Obama's hands. They spent the $6 billion, and they handed him back the keys to the White House. A bit of a travesty, if you will, and a bit of a maniacal, ridiculous aspect of the expenditures of capital. So we have the U.S. in their fiscal cliff, which we have spent previous times chatting about. They are in this premise where justice must seem to be done, and this is omnipresent, Bosco. We have many economies around saying, ooh, we need to slap everybody on the proverbial wrist with the Nerf bat in order to seem as if we care about the fact that they are manipulating things and then they are compromising things. I will return to the U.S. in a moment, but let us chat a little about the Eurozone and Europe. Because as we fall further into 2013, and as we watch this calamity unfold before our very eyes, again, we fall back to the more things change, the more they stay the same. Let's review Greece. Will it survive? Will it exit the Eurozone? Is unemployment lowering or is it increasing? Well, as we've seen, Bosco, the unemployment numbers stand at, whatever they stand at, 100 units, and the people who tell us the unemployment numbers start to worry that if they told us the truth, we would all freak out and run for the door. Well, God knows we don't want that, so let's just lie to everybody in order to sweep things under the rug, or as somebody else has coined the phrase, let's kick the can down the road. Unemployment is not getting any better in Greece, and what they're now doing is reporting it in a way that will lessen the impact of it. Will Greece survive? Yes, in fact it will, because what's happening is the Greeks are starting to understand that they cannot rely on the government. Now let's put this in perspective. A Greek, this was done in the last few months, an associate of mine was in Greece, and the last time he was in Greece, before this time, 2 times ago, all the shops on one side of the street were just gone in Athens. They were all empty, but the other side of the street had open shops. Now he returned but a few months ago, and now on both sides of the street, the shops are gone. And what has transpired is the retirement monies that the Greek government had promised Stavros, if you will, whatever his name is, they were at a point in time before the Greek government got into trouble, they were at $3,200 a euro. This was his retirement fund that the government had promised him. They went from 3,200 to 24 to 12. They're now at 300 euros a month. This is a definitive example of how a government will renege on the pension programs that it promises its citizens. This is a direct demonstration of how governments will not take care of you. So this guy in Athens or in Greece somewhere is pissed because what he thought was going to be 3,200 euros a month, Bosco, is now 300. And his fretfulness is he just wants more money out of the government, right?
Yep.
What a devastating declaration. Now this is happening in Greece. Guess what? Italy, Spain, Ireland, Portugal, I mean, the pigs nations, right? I mean, the more things change, the more they stay the same. Now, now let's leave Greece. Let's park ourselves in Italy and Spain for a moment. Let's chat a little about the difference and the perspective of the two phrases, austerity versus stimulus. This is everywhere. It's in every country in the world. And austerity means let's cut spending. We just saw what the government in Greece has done by cutting spending. All the monies that we're going to give to you pensioners, you're just SOL. Sorry, we told you 3,200 euros a month, but we're going to give you 300 euros a month. That'll piss a lot of people off. Now, austerity is the cutting of government programs. It's the cutting of a variety of things. Now we park ourselves back in the States, and this fiscal cliff issue is, there's two aspects to it, as we said before. One is increasing taxes on the rich. The other is decreasing spending. And what the feds have managed to do on New Year's Eve was, yeah, let's not deal with this yet. Let's just push it down the road. So now we come back into the stimulus issue. Okay, one was austerity. Let's just stop spending. Britain is a classic example of austerity not making a bit of difference. The British government and the whole economic system in Britain, austerity hasn't done a thing. And now we enter into the whole context of stimulus as Jim Sinclair, rightfully so in our opinion, I think it's fair to say, Bosco, has declared that they are so steeped in spending money that there is no way out but to undertake to spend their way out, which is literally maniacal in its best perspective, okay? QE, quantitative easing to infinity. They've now raised, the U.S. government, ladies and gentlemen, are now spending, get a load of this, Bosco, $85 billion a month buying useless money, spending or printing money. That's $1 trillion a year. This is a bit maniacal, okay? Now.
Yeah, and this is, you know, just wanted to add a point, you know, the austerity applies to, you know, the pensioners and the general public and the middle class, but when it comes time for the big financial institutions, when they're in trouble, oh no problem, we'll bail them out, we'll protect them, and you know, so it's kind of a double-sided issue.
Oh, no question.
Sorry,
and one of the manifestations of all of that is we, and we have addressed them many times, but Bosco just brought up the whole issue of too big to fail.
Yeah.
So now let's park ourselves in on another side and another topic, but it's all related. First off, the Bank of England is the current governor of the Bank of England is leaving, and the new Bank of England governor to be is, his name is Mark Carney. He was the Bank of Canada's governor. Oh, guess where he comes from, Bosco? Our old favorite employer, Goldman Sachs.
Yeah.
The Bank of England is nefariously involved in all kinds of global financial doings, if you will. Okay. Now let's jump over to Switzerland for a moment, Bosco. Switzerland.
Okay, Jeff, yep. Just 1 second. I just wanted to let people know, you know, we talk about these kind of things often, and the important thing to remember is that these central bankers, these governors, Fed chairmen, and so on, the reason why it's so important that we focus on them moving from place to place and why it matters that they're a former Goldman Sachs is because these people are not elected by the public. They're appointed by the executive branch of government, and, you know, nobody has any say in who is appointed. They make these decisions behind closed doors, and they'll say, okay, Mark Carney, now you're going to go over to the Central Bank of England, and, you know. So it's very important what that person's background is, his connections in the industry, and so on, because they're, you know, appointed behind closed doors. They're not elected by the people or by Congress or anything like that. This is why, you know, these things are important to look at by the motivation or the intention of these governors and chairmen and so on. So, you know, just wanted to you know, at that point that people understand why we even discuss this.
Great, great point, Bosco. Ladies and gentlemen, even though elections, in our opinion, are modestly rigged and the spending of $6 billion to go nowhere and have Obama step back into the White House is a bit ironic from a financial perspective, the appointment of Mark Carney is one of the most powerful financial men on the planet. The Bank of England is still a very big player, and he is appointed, as Bosco pointed out. He isn't elected. Okay, no, very good point. Now we're going to jump to Switzerland for a moment, and we're going to look into the Bank of International Settlements, which is in Basel, in Switzerland. And what the Bank of International Settlements has pretended they are doing is ruling and making sure that the banks all in and of themselves gather around at, in a self-regulatory way, old Bosco, and that is... They are now saying, well, we want to make sure that the capital requirements and the credit restraints and all of those that we govern and rule these banks. Well, ladies and gentlemen, get a load of this. They say we want to make sure that the banks are all stable. And in the back rooms, it's the banks can do and spend whatever they want because the governments of each of these countries will bail them out. And now, again, it's the whole concept of justice must seem to be done. So the Basel rulers are now saying we want the banks to have more capital, more money, so that when they do blow up, at least they're less likely to blow up because they have more money in the tanks. Well, the Basel rulers have said, well, we're going to ease those requirements just a bit because we want to give them a little more time to accumulate some capital. This is all, again, laughable to those of us on the inside and those of us who share our perspectives on this. The concept of the bankers, one, governing and ruling themselves, these are the big ones, right, Bosco? They will happily throw ABC Bank under the wheels of the bus in a moment, but the Goldman Sachs and the JP Morgans and the Morgan Stanleys of the world, they're happily buoyed up by infinite government spending.
Well, not just smaller banks, but I mean, we've had in 2008 when Lehman Brothers went under. I mean, Lehman Brothers wasn't no small institution. They were around in the U.S. for I think like 125 years or something, and they were pretty much thrown under the bus. So, players are.
That is an interesting point, Bosco. I mean, Lehman Brothers was considered in the financial community the weak sister. And what, yeah, in fact happened with Lehman Brothers is that they threw it under the bus and then went in and raided the cookie jar and took all of their beneficial assets. But you're right, Bosco. I mean, the two big to fail banks are becoming fewer and fewer and fewer. And the consolidation of the bank industry over the last 5 or 6 years is absolutely shocking. You know, there was a spreadsheet of all this stuff that we put together for one of the courses that I teach, and it was shocking. So now let's back into the question. Ladies and gentlemen, is Europe getting better? Okay. Real quick answer to that is there is no flipping way it's getting better. They're flapping their wings, plummeting to the earth, trying to figure out how to fly. The German economy is slowing down. The modality of how they get themselves out has been further propagated by good old Mario Draghi, our friend Mario Draghi, in the European Central Bank, and he said, we will do whatever we need to do to support the euro. Read between the lines, and that means we will print money and spend money on keeping the banks afloat. Now, ladies and gentlemen, when you have a healthy economy, when you have, let's go micro for a moment, let's have a little, it's a little hamlet in the middle of Ontario, a little hamlet somewhere in Alberta, and you have farmers and you have merchants and you have growers and you have carpenters and all that stuff, and they all interact with each other. Everybody prospers because it's a prospering community. They live off the land the old way. That is the concept of economic health as a result of what Bosco's good at, people want. What Dolores is good at, people want, and they trade and they move around in that stuff. So that brings us to the concept of economic recovery being based on spending and what it's called in economic terms is velocity of money, money moving through the system. Now, let's ask ourselves the question. If things are bad, the economy is slowing, Unemployment is really bad, even though how the governments represent how the unemployment numbers doesn't tell us it's bad, but we know because Bob and Ted and Carol and Alice are all out of work. Do we go out and spend money? Does that increase because of our confidence level falling? Do we start to go spend money? No, we don't. We start to withdraw our spending. So we, by our very nature of saying and understanding that the economy is slowing, things are not good, things are declining, we are going to be far more conservative in this. So the concept of economic recovery is based on spending. Can economic recovery happen when you and I and Bosco and all of the listeners are going, whoa, things are a little tough here. I think I will forego the spending, forego the expenditure, forego expanding in the businesses. So let's play devil's advocate and say the economy, while these false flags are saying the economy is recovering, there's no way it's recovering. Absolutely not. There is no way you can spend your way. There's no way that people who actually have money, as opposed to borrow money, can spend their way into economic recovery. So what the governments are doing now is giving money to the banks and telling the banks to lend it out, indebting the nation more so, the personal things. It just isn't going to work. Now, I liken this to a simple analogy, Bosco, and it's this. When we as business partners, when we as man and wife, when we as brother and sister, when we have arguments and we fight and we rant and rave and we yell, when we yell at our politicians, when we yell at our leaders, when we yell at our bosses, the objective is to express our discontent or our upset. And what is best done is by shooting off our bullets into the air, merely because we are expressing our upset and our discontent verbally, but we're not doing it destructively. Now, if you choose to do it the other way, and that is you're standing in a boat yelling and screaming at whoever it is, your business partner, your politicians, even it is your wife, is it wise to be shooting bullets into the boat as you watch it both sink? Well, ladies and gentlemen, I would propose unequivocally that the governments globally are shooting bullets into the boat as they spend or print money to spend their way out of this. There is no way out of it through spending. And what they're doing is they're sinking the economy, and they're sinking the boat, and they are dragging things down. Thus spending, the printing of money is a very, very short-term myopic answer to the calamity and the malady of the global economy. Okay? So now let's go to who is going to rescue us and what some economists are talking about maniacally optimistically. This is silly optimism because it cannot be backed by economic numbers. Now, that being said, both Bosco and I are so skeptical of economic numbers that we find it really hard to believe them. Our sense of discernment grows every day, doesn't it, Bosco?
Yep.
Let's chat about BRICS. Let's chat about BRICS. And the economists speak to BRICS of this is Brazil, Russia, China, or India, China, to match the acronym, and South Africa. Now, the Chinese, as we've seen, are spending money in Canada. It's hard for the Chinese to spend money in the States because the Americans won't let them. But the Canadians seem to allow the Chinese to come in and spend money. They've recently bought a little company called Nexen for $15 or $16 billion. The Chinese know that the U.S. dollar is declining in value, and they are spending money in North America as fast as they can because next year the U.S. dollar isn't going to be worth as much as it is now. There is a very simple premise to that, and we've talked about that on many occasions. Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa, all of their economies are faltering because everybody's been looking to them to spend money in other economies. They're starting to slide. It's the old adage of what we just based on, we can spend our way out of this. Well, as everything is starting to slow, even in Germany, and the Germans have an economy and a modality of work and an economic mindset which is very diligent and very frugal and very pragmatic. Even Germany is slowing down because they have no place to sell their brilliant goods and services, right? So now that's a brief round-the-world look. We also have the regulators. As I said before, Bosco, we have the regulators slapping people on the wrists to the tune of, with a Nerf bat, charging banks with all kinds of stuff and charging them a 2 to 3% penalty on the manipulations of the market. The manipulations of the metals market we're going to address in a moment, but also the manipulations of the stock market. As
and that
banks,
manipulation, mm-hmm. sorry, Jeff, that manipulation issue too, as you know, we discussed before, it's not like it's something new. I was just actually watching a video yesterday on the crash of 1929, and you know, even in that documentary, they talk about that the insiders and the big banks and so on were manipulating the markets back then. It was just, and this is what brought in the reason for bringing in the Glass-Steagall Act in, I think it was 1934 or whatever, to separate commercial banks from investment banks. And then in 1999, Bill Clinton repealed the Glass-Steagall Act, and then we have the same thing again. And another thing, too, is that for certain institutions, manipulation is legal, and it was passed by the executive order when Ronald Reagan was president. So, you know, it's hard to believe that we have a genuine market when you have these big institutions and so on that have the ability to, you know, manipulate the paper. And what I usually tell my clients is, you know, forget about looking at the markets to see where your, you know, wealth, and look at on the street, you know, just take a step back and look at your own financial picture. And, you know, regarding the spending and so on, you know, people are, when the government is spending, that's fine. But when the citizens are spending, a lot of them are spending on credit. They're using credit cards to do their shopping. So it's not, even if people are outspending, you have to look at, what? How are they spending? What are they using to spend? You know, if they're using credit to spend, that just means that they're deeper and deeper in debt. So, and this is what is going to happen. You know, when people know that the value of money is going down, okay, they're going to try to increase their debt because they think that their value of debt is going to get inflated away, that the value of the dollar is going to go down, and it's going to crash, and then, you know, the debts are going to be excused. Well, I really don't think that's going to happen. They're going to make some changes, but I don't think they're going to let people get away with, you know, what do they call it, a debt jubilee or whatever.
Well, there's, I mean, one of the easy things, I mean, and let's put it into really simple terms, Bosco, because Bosco has very astutely pointed out something that's very obvious to the wise, insightful people, but it's lost on us. And that is, Bosco, go in the back room and get the Monopoly board and go in there and pull out that paper, and you can pay your bills with that. If, in fact, ladies and gentlemen, somebody showed up to pay your debt or to pay your what they owed you in Monopoly money, you'd say, bonkers, that's just bollocks. We're not going to do that. We're not going to take Monopoly money. That's what happens when you start to print money in the manner and the way in which they do it, okay? So, and Bosco's point is very well taken. You can inflate your way out of debt. All you'd have to do is print money. Now, the Americans and the Europeans, we only have one currency in Europe, as you all know. If all they do is they just turn their printing presses on to print all of this stuff out and then convince everybody, just go along with it, There will be at some point in time where people call this to task and say the emperor has no clothes. This gives me great consternation, and we sound like a broken record to the tune of this. However, I mean, let us wander through. I suspect Bosco, as we rant and rave in this fashion that we tend to do, we may even have more to revisit next week. However, let us now, we've now gone around the globe, we've talked about many countries, and we will address other countries in future shows, but now let's get into the our bailiwick and our agenda, and that is the precious metals, the golds and silvers. And now let's do sort of a walkthrough of what we see, how we see it, and how discerning we'd like to, where our discernment would like us to go. Okay, and so now let's play the hand of where we think precious metals are going. I think it's fair to say, Bosco, that we've probably been never more bullish, have we?
Well, I'm bullish.
And
you know, for me, Jeff, it's like, you know, if people tend to measure their wealth or their economic condition by looking at the markets and, oh, what is the market doing, and then it makes them feel good. But, you know, when you look at when markets are under the influence of government and government is bailing out the markets and printing money, it's a feel good thing that is phony, because the government's in control and they're just printing money. Just like, you know, the market, for example, in Zimbabwe, hyperinflation, the market in Zimbabwe was showing 8,000% returns, but, you know, a cup of coffee cost $10,000, right? So, and
yeah,
people,
exactly.
You know, so people got to stop. I mean, depend. I'm not saying for everyone, but I mean, you can't look at the condition of the stock market as how your wealth is being measured. You know, you got to sit back and look at, you know, what's being taken away from you. Our freedoms and our liberties are being infringed upon. Our pensions are being reduced. Our medical care is going down. The education system. You know, you look at quality of life, the quality of food that you eat, you know, and that kind of a thing. But to measure your wealth just by looking at a stock index is, I think it's misleading, because one, the index, stock indexes are always changing, and they're always adding and removing new companies to make the index look good. Like, for example, the Dow Jones index, since its inception, there's only two companies that still exist in that index. I believe it's ExxonMobil and IBM. You know, so it's not a genuine or a good measure of really the condition of the market, because one, it's measured in the U.S. dollar, which is, you know, being inflated away, and, you know, the value of the dollar lost somewhere in the 90% range since 1971 when they took it off the gold standard. And if you're continually adding and removing companies to that index, I don't think it reflects the true nature or the true condition of the economy, because you're always adding good companies to that index to make it look good and keep going up. So, I don't know. It's just taking a different perspective, I guess.
And again, point well taken, Bosco. Let me wander through, ladies and gentlemen, Bosco and my perspective on a couple of things that I think is incredibly important and very valid relative to our bullish nature. The first off is, as we've said before, when the U.S. Fed, now never mind the Euro Fed, but when the U.S. Fed is spending $85 billion a month, that is always bullish for tangible assets. What they're doing is printing fiat currency, okay? So now let's chat a little about good old Warren Buffett's gold bash and who stepped up to say Warren Buffett's full of nonsense because we do think gold is legitimate. So who are those guys? Who are those players? Bosco, well, that would be George Soros. That would be John Paulson. That would be David Einhorn. That would be Jim Rogers. That would be Kyle Bass. That would be Ray Dalio. So all of these guys are saying, no, sorry, gold is incredibly important. What about Eric Sprott, who is one of our Canadians who's brilliant, okay? So now that's a part of people saying gold is important. Now let's look at some other issues. Central bankers have for the last 2 or 3 years, they're starting to become net buyers of gold. The IMF has started to flip to be a net buyer of gold. China and Korea have explicitly stated that gold is the only safe asset. Central banks are starting to buy gold. And as Bosco pointed out a week or two, maybe 3 weeks ago now, Bosco, gold may soon be, because there is seriously talk about it becoming a tier one asset. If that's the case, as Bosco pointed out some time ago, banks are required to maintain minimum amounts of tier one assets. Gold hasn't been a tier one asset yet. So if that is the case, banks will be incentivized to buy gold. Oh my, okay? Now all of a sudden, some of these guys who we would like to think are thinking soundly, wouldn't we go, Bosco, are suggesting that gold should be, might be, let's aim at gold becoming part of a standard with which currencies are backstopping it. Okay? So now let's global gold movements. Let's reiterate some of these things that we've brought, Bosco and I have brought to light over the last little bit. Okay? And global gold movements, if you will. Okay? Now, much of this is a bit fuzzy, if you will, but there we have been, while we are painted with the conspiracy buff issue, let us merely reiterate that we are of the mind that you need to be discerning and you need to practice self-reliance, okay? Now, let's walk through 3 points that we have brought to light over the last year or so, and that is that the 3 points that I want to address is that gold is actually in the Fed, in the vaults, in the Fed and Fort Knox, but we don't own it anymore, okay? We're told that the gold sort of moves from one side to the other, and the ownership issues are made way fuzzier by the fact that the authorities in Fort Knox, in the Fed, in the Federal Reserve, they won't allow an independent audit of the gold that actually exists, okay? So that's odd in any consequence, okay? The next conspiracy theory, if you will, is the gold in the vaults may not actually be gold. It may be tungsten-impregnated gold, because this has sort of presented itself in the retail gold market. And now, all of a sudden, maybe we have the issue that gold may be salted, it's called, okay? And that, you know, that makes the conspiracy theorist in both Bosco and I wonder that maybe where there's smoke, there is fire, okay? And then the third point is there is no gold. A bunch of this has been lent out, which various websites have proposed over the last little bit. And the leasing of gold to the bullion banks, and these banks sold it in the open money to pay for things, then, you know, it is interesting that the Fed pools the physical metal and the leased metal on a single line of their self-reported balance sheet, which is, again, self-reporting, self-regulating, self-organizing, and then telling the world whatever they want the world to hear. Okay, we have powers that be, fiat money. We have the printing presses going unbelievably rigorously. We have the manipulations of the market. Interesting point that I wanted to bring you there. There was a point a little while ago, Bosco, that J.P. Morgan had a short on gold, which was $18 billion, which was not on gold, but in silver. You don't think that's manipulation of the markets? There are all kinds of things that make both Bosco and I incredibly skeptical about what all this is going, but it also leads to one conclusion, ladies and gentlemen. It is very, very unlikely that gold and owning gold and silver will do you a disservice right now. And whether you buy it, Bosco, at $1,650, at $1,750, at $1,800, it's important to own it, because there will be a point. You cannot flap your wings as you're plummeting to earth at 100 miles an hour, you cannot do this forever. You're going to land. The printing of fiat currency is going to have an effect. And owning gold is a safe, valid, sound modality of being safe. Okay, Bosco, here ended the rant. I apologize for getting off on all of these topics, which are our favorites, but I will take a breath now. I've had this delightful rant.
Very, very well taken, Jeff. I mean, people need to, you know, need to have these points available to them and, you know, to think about. And, you know, gold, one of the, you know, points that you mentioned regarding confiscation, I just wanted to let our listeners know, you know, I get people ask me that question once in a while. And the way that we avoid any chance of counterfeit coins or fake bars, anything entering our network, I guess you could say, is one, you know, I do a lot of research and due diligence before I deal with a refiner or another dealer, make sure that they're legitimate and they have the proper system in place. Majority of our refiners are registered with the LBMA. They're ISO 9000 certified, which is a manufacturing and quality management certification for international standards. And I think how these counterfeit bars enter this, whether or not how they're, if they're in central bank vaults, I mean, that's their own problem. I'm worried about, you know, my own clients and so on. But, you know, nobody can come, one, nobody can come into my office just off the street. You have to book an appointment to come in here. And two, if you're not a client and you didn't purchase any gold or silver from us, we won't buy it off you on the spot and pay you. What we do is we take that gold and silver, we send it out to be analyzed, and if it passes the analysis through our X-ray machine, then we pay you the next day. So, you know, these guys that are going around trying to pawn off these counterfeit bars or coins, they're not going to come into my office and get paid right away and then take off, okay? If you're not a client and you didn't purchase it from me, I'm going to hold your gold and silver for 24 hours to have it analyzed, and then you can come back the next day for your funds. So anyone that wants to pawn off any counterfeit material here, I don't think that they're going to wait 24 hours and let me analyze the thing. So I eliminate that potential for any fake bars entering my network here. So, and, you know, just the fact that, you know, I don't have a retail location. We have a private office, you know, and you have to book an appointment to come in and see us. You know, those kind of people, I think, shy away from this kind of a business. So most of those coins and bars that get in, those are at, you know, retail locations, at pawn shops, at jewelry shops, and, you know, small coin shops where you can walk in and sell your coins and get cash right away. But we don't operate like that, so we try to eliminate any kind of counterfeit coins entering our system. I haven't seen any. I've never came across any yet. And even that one last year that was revealed in New York, as I said to a lot of my clients before, I have questions regarding whether or not that was a genuine story. Because, you know, those jewelers in New York have been around for a long time. I think that jeweler that had it was in business for 30 or 40 years. And, you know, a lot of those guys can catch those kind of things right off the bat. And, you know, he said that he analyzed it. I'd like to see how he analyzed it. And the pictures that were posted on the Internet, the packaging of that gold bar that was fake, the packaging for that brand, I think it was a Credit Suisse bar, the packaging didn't look authentic to me either, because I seen those bars and the packaging looked different. So I don't know. I think maybe people need to understand that you know, gold is competition, okay? It's competition to mainstream financial products, to fiat currencies. So you have to imagine that the people in power, the establishment, if you will, if their, you know, game is being infringed upon, you know, they're going to do whatever they can to make sure that their game is intact. And when gold is competition to their game, they're going to do whatever they can to bring negative opinions and put out negative news on gold. So, but eventually, when people understand that, you know, there's a reason why gold has been considered a store of value, has been considered money for longer than any other instrument or product or material in the history of the world. There's certain qualities and certain things about gold that are everlasting, that you know, it's outperformed every other asset class in the past 12 years, and it's been considered a measure of wealth for longer than any government or currency or stock market or bank or has ever existed. So, you know, I'm not saying that everybody should just own gold, but I do believe that it should be a part of everyone's portfolio. And I don't mean paper gold or gold mining stocks. Physical gold and silver bullion should be a portion of everyone's portfolio as a store of value. Again, I like gold mining stocks. You know, for full disclosure, I do invest in gold mining stocks. And, you know, that's where your speculation and your leverage comes in. You know, if you're investing in a gold mining stock and for example, if gold re-enters the monetary system, you know, it's kind of like you're actually buying a utility company almost, where they're producing they're producing money and at leverage.
Bosco,
so,
I think we're over our time, so we need to be mindful of where we're going.
Yes, we are. I started talking, and
you're as bad as I am.
Closing up. Yeah. Well, you know, well, Jeff, I can talk about gold and silver for hours. Sometimes
exactly.
I get going, but yeah, we're running low on time here, folks. But you know, I just wanted to, you know, I guess in conclusion, you know, folks, gold is an important part of your portfolio. It is a great store of value, and you know, it should be taken into serious consideration. So, you know, please give us a call at 800-649-6722. Our website is centralmetalscorp.com. And Jeff, if you have some closing comments and if you'd like to give out your email, then we can close out the program.
All righty. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome into 2013. You can reach me via my email at viadao, V-I-A-T-A-O, at gmail.com. Bosco, thank you very much. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for allowing us to be of service and trusting that we've turned on the lights, and we will chat with you again next week.
Okay, thanks, Jeff. See you next week. Goodbye.
Cheers.